Blog Talk Radio.
Yo,
America. Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Yeah. Mr. Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yeah, here we go, people.
Yeah.
Here we go now.
So I'm having a little smoke challenge here, so hold on real quick, guys. Hope you guys are doing good, man. Sorry. It's fun times.
Oh, that's right. I thought somebody was driving a forklift in the background.
No, it's just something else. Anyway, we'll get this party started here in a quick second here. Again, we're going to have some fun here talking sports 12th man in the NFL draft night. So I don't have too much to say here. I know congratulations to the Blazers. I know just want to throw that out there because I know Gary's going to be excited about that too as well. But let's really kick it off with the fellas really quickly as we get this party started here on this Thursday draft night. JQ, how you feeling this evening, bro?
I'm good. I'm just going to say, how what you doing, man? You over there setting fire to the house? I don't know what's happening. We hear the fire trucks coming. We know what's happening. But, man, I'm doing
good.
Come on,
Drake. Stop cooking years ago.
I'm hanging out with my homeboy Mike, watching some of this draft. I'm a little perturbed in my business to take Haskins, but I'm not overly surprised. So I'm hanging in there. How you doing, bro?
Yeah, I'm good. Like I said, and the challenge is it's called self cleaning. By the way, you self clean the oven, but it's all good, man. So that's what's happening here in the A. But you know, wrap it up.
I hate doing jokes, man.
So you know, but that's what's really going on too. So all good.
Hey,
go ahead, Rob.
That's Sports Talk Radio. You got to have jokes in it. But, yeah, obviously, out here in Phoenix tonight, trying to get the pulse of Phoenix, you know, and how they feel about Kyler Murray on draft night. So I've been talking to a lot of the local fans here in Phoenix all day long, getting ready for the draft. Obviously, they're excited about Kyler Murray, but they still saying the same thing. We got to figure out a way to protect them. And right now, we don't have the pieces to protect them. So that's the heartbeat of the local fan base here in Phoenix.
Yes, sir.
Jerry, what up? Yep, go ahead. All right, let's kick this off here really quickly with the show. This is going nuts here in the background here. So we're going to have some fun. We're not starting with the Oregon Sports Report here. We're going to kick it off with an update of the NFL draft here. Just that's what's on the agenda here. We'll get to you guys and all that fun stuff. We got a lot of things to talk about. Damian Lillard, all that fun stuff too. So anyway, go ahead and get started, Rob, with the NFL draft update and the best players still available by you, Rob.
Well, you know, obviously the biggest surprise for me so far is Juwan Taylor. You know, he's a guy I thought particularly was a top 10 pick. I thought he was the best overall offensive lineman in the draft when you combine the run and the pass game. You know, I thought at worst, you know, he would be somewhere in that 9, 10, 11 range, you know, with his athletic ability. So, for starters, he's that guy that I think is the highest rated player left on the board. And then for me, when you go number two, Drew Lock. Obviously, you got some quarterback teams, teams with needs of quarterbacks, such as Denver Broncos. Broncos passed up on them twice. Obviously, sticking with Joe Flacco. They passed up them at 10, and then they moved down to 20, and they still passed them up here. Number three, Cody Ford, versatile offensive lineman. And Marquise Brown just got picked to the Ravens. He was actually going to be my number four guy, so I guess I can remove him. wide receiver from Oklahoma. But Cody Ford, versatile offensive lineman, can play both guard positions, can play right tackle and possibly even left tackle in the pinch. So versatile offensive lineman, he was number three. As I just mentioned, number four was Marquise Brown, but he just got picked by the Ravens. Montez Sweat will be number four right now. Obviously, there are some, you know, concerns, you know, from a heart condition standpoint. But from a talent standpoint, Montez Sweat can be a beast of a pass rusher in the NFL. From Mississippi State, some off-the-field concerns. And actually, number five now will be Byron Murphy, the cornerback from Washington. Was very solid skill set, very sound technique player. Those would be my five best players still available right now, now that Marquise Brown has been taken.
The Giants taking Jones over Haskins and Locke was the biggest surprise for me outside of Cleveland Farrell going to the Raiders. So I'm with you in a league where, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a chance. I'm still surprised with the numbers we put up in Missouri that he's still out there. And also, when we know this is a defensive draft, some of the defensive players that are sliding, especially Sweat with the heart condition and maybe some of the cornerbacks like Baker and Byron Murphy, I can see them sliding a little bit because this draft is so loaded at defense. But those offensive linemen, when there were only maybe, you know, four to five offensive linemen that have first-round grades, to see those two guys still on the board and see the kid from Alabama State go before both of them was really surprising to me. So that's my takeaway from it is if you know you are in a deep defensive draft, I would thought people maybe – even if they reached a little bit for offensive players, they would have done it in the first round and said, okay, rounds two through seven, I'll just get, you know, defensive players because I know this is a very deep draft for defense. So I'm with you on that. I'm the most shocked at Drew Locke. I'm super shocked at it. It feels a lot like Aaron Rodgers, doesn't it? You know, dropping the way he does, and he may end up in a good situation. So it may end up, you know, better for him in the long run.
Yeah, and you look at some of these teams that already have a quarterback. Well, I mean – 27, Oakland. That would be a team to watch for Drew Locke, possibly. Even the Chargers, you know, getting prepared for life after Phillip Rivers. You know, that could be a situation to watch here as well. So those are two possibilities for – well, the coach just traded the pick, so this is – well, they traded to the Redskins. But it'll be interesting. If there are going to be any teams that's left in the first round, it'll be Oakland or the Chargers. Or what you may see as a team. Oh, don't even rule out the Patriots. You know, life after Tom Brady, too.
Patriots.
Or you can possibly see a team trade back into the back end of the first quarter. I'm sorry, the first round to get Drew Locke. So that'll be interesting to see what happens here in the next few picks.
Yeah, agreed.
West Coast.
I'm just surprised about Dwayne Haskins. I don't understand what's going on there. But we're not – I mean, we're fans, and I love that we're fans, but I always want to put my faith in NFL guys, guys that really – their job 24/7 is football. Their whole being is football and what's best for their franchise and all that. So – when I see that Dwayne Haskins is not gone, then I have to think, what are the experts and what are the football people and these scouts and these people that do all these analytics on these players? And now, you know, it's like, what do I know and what have I been looking at? Because I would have thought he would have been the second quarterback taken by a whole bunch of teams that need a quarterback.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's a prototypical size for it. I don't get it. We'll find out. But I'm with you there, Curtis. I don't understand how he falls that far. But that's a perfect spot. Washington, I mean, maybe not playing so much at home, but Washington not having to spend any additional draft capital to move up to go get their quarterback and having arguably the second quarterback on the board fall to them at, what is it, 15? That's powerful for Washington.
Yeah, and yeah, I definitely rated Haskins the second best quarterback in the draft. And as JQ mentioned, I mean, that's still pretty much the standing pat and getting them at 15. I don't like the Giants pick of Daniel Jones at number six. I really don't. I think that's a huge reach. And I had Daniel Jones as the fourth best quarterback in the draft, and the Giants taking him as the second quarterback taken at the number six spot. So, I mean, either you like him there, you trade down, or you wait to 17. To me, that was clearly a reach, in my opinion, for the New York Football Giants. And they're still – for the Washington Redskins. And I even think the Giants reach a little bit with Dexter Lawrence, heck of a football player, heck of a defensive tackle, player national championship team. But I'm thinking Lawrence is still somewhere in that 22-32 range, slight reach. But, you know, I think the Giants have reached on both of their picks here in this draft.
I agree.
What do you think about?
As a matter of fact, my latest mock, I had Dexter Lawrence going 31 to the Rams.
Well, I'm also thinking about some of the stuff I've heard around here in Portland. And a couple of things I do know. Denver apparently is thinking that Joe Flacco is going to be the bridge. And I know Elway has been down in Eugene a couple of times that I know of. And I know Elway, I think he is really, he's probably in Phil Knight's ear. I think he really wants a shot at next year at that Justin Hubert up here in Oregon. I think the Broncos got him targeted and got him targeted already. And so Jack, Joe, they didn't get a quarterback for the Broncos because they're planning on apparently trying to get that Justin Hubert.
I think the Bengals are with that.
They
got
a tank.
Yep.
They, I mean, if you're going to have to Tua or if you're going after Justin Herbert, you pretty much got a tank in order to have a shot at. You got to have a bad
Are you planning to move up?
Yeah, that too. Yep, getting draft capital to move up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of those two things you would have to do to get your hands on one of those two guys.
So what about any underrated or overrated players you got for this?
Oh, well, you know, when you talk about the underrated portion of the draft, a few guys I have in mind. Greg Little, offensive tackle from Ole Miss. You know, I think he's an underrated player, a guy that could probably come in and still start from day one. Probably still, you might see a team pick him here in the late first round, but for the most part, he's a second-round grade. But I think he could be a steal and could still come in and play for you right away. Jalen Ferguson, edge rusher from Louisiana Tech, you know, obviously small school. I think he's another guy that can come in and help some football teams in the pass rusher situation almost right away as well. Lonnie Johnson, cornerback from Kentucky. Stoops has done a phenomenal job with elevating the play of a lot of his players. A lot of these guys are only 2- and 3-star recruits. He's another guy that I think can come in and contribute to a football team right away. And JQ can probably elaborate on this one. Draymond Jones from Ohio State, I think, is a guy that has tremendous talent. Underwhelmed a little bit at Ohio State, but I think the talent is there. If you can get him with the right coach to push the right buttons with him, I think he's another guy to watch. And also another Ohio State guy, Terry McLaurin, wide receiver. Another guy I think that could be a surprising pick in this draft. This is not a very loaded wide receiver draft, but I think he can be somewhat of a surprise. We just talked about Montez Sweat. And the Redskins just picked him at 26. So they trade back into the first round and get Montez Sweat, a guy that has, like I said, so much talent and potential.
Yeah, I mean, the Redskins, we talk about them a lot, but they're actually really quietly having a pretty decent draft. That's a great value pick. I want to talk about those cornerbacks, and I know they're – I see underrating the fact that they haven't gone yet, but I look at the production of Greedy Williams and Baker from LSU and Georgia, respectively. And I'm looking at them still on the board as, you know – you don't always have to be a burner. You can be fast and have no technique and get burnt. And you can be a little slower but have great technique and always be in the play. And I look at those two guys and try to figure out what's really happening. Baker may not be a blazer, but neither was Richard Sherman. And he made quite a living in Seattle, you know, playing on the other side in that cover three and being a pretty much a shutdown cornerback. So I'm surprised they're still out there. I know the draft is deep at defense, but have we had a cornerback go yet? I don't think we have, and we're in the – in the 20s, I'm a little shocked at that. I'm really shocked at that. But, yeah, you make great points, Rob. Draymond just was overshadowed on that defensive line at Ohio State, and I think he's going to be a good rotational player. So I think he's properly valued. I don't think you're going to take him too high. He's not going to be a star, but he's going to be productive in a rotation. And McLaurin, I think, could be very underrated. People have to understand that Ohio State didn't really have a quarterback that threw the ball until last year with Haskins. You're talking about J.Q. Barrett, who was a runner. and Braxton Miller, who was a runner. So, you know, he didn't always get the stats that he would have gotten if he had had Drew Lock for 4 years. I think their numbers would be much better if they had had that situation. So I'm in agreement with you on both of those guys. He made me mess around and go somewhere with a good quarterback and be a steal.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and, you know, just some of the guys that I think that have been slightly overrated so far. I mean, we talked about Daniel Jones. Obviously, in my opinion, definitely not the sixth, shouldn't be in the top six of this draft. From a talent, you know, not necessarily a strong arm. Obviously, is he well coached? Absolutely. But I definitely think he's a guy that's certainly overrated. Cleveland Farrell, too, is another guy that should not have been going in the top five of this draft. A solid, productive player. I don't think he's going to be in the top five. You're looking at a guy coming in and be an all-pro. And I don't think Cleveland Farrell is that type of player. But is he a starter in the NFL for quite a few years? Absolutely. But definitely not a guy that I look at as being a top five pick in this particular draft.
I think there was a cornerback. I think there was a quarter a cornerback pick. I see one come
I'm
off.
Hold on, I'm looking right now to speak to. Yeah,
no, it's not the one taken yet.
There has not been one picked as of yet. There's been a lot of outside linebackers and, you know, even a safety, if you will, but not necessarily a cornerback at this time. But, yeah, I mean, that's surprising too, Curtis, because we're kind of keeping an eye on everything, kind of as JQ said, we're kind of like watching because, again, you know, everyone's been throwing smoke screens and everyone's been lying, and then it's just from once it gets down to it, you're like, whoa, a lot of surprises actually going down too. And there's some things that actually, you know, like we said, you know, it was still 50-50 about, you know, Kyler, but then it's like, all right, once it got Kyler, everything kind of was like started like going down. And the, like we talked about, the biggest surprise at the gate was, you know, Cleveland, you know, Farrell getting drafted there. And then you're like, whoa, okay. Now it's going to go somewhere. They followed by, obviously, with Daniel Jones, too. So it's been interesting to say the least as well. So
Michigan,
I guess.
Man. What has Gary.
Yeah, I like what the Redskins have done so far in this draft. Haskins and Montez Sweat. The Redskins, in my opinion, these two picks that they've gotten. Very, very good value at both picks.
Yeah, I was just going to say for the overrated, I'm looking at Bush and Gary, and everybody knows I hate Michigan, and I'm a full-blown Michigan hater, and I will own it. But if I'm still being objective, if you look at those two guys, what did they do in any big game for Michigan where you say, you know what, those two guys are game wreckers, and I'm just going to go in the top 12, and they go in the top 12. I'm not saying they don't really have talent, and it may be an indictment of the coaching they got in Michigan. But for them to go that high and you don't put on any tape where they're in a big game where they made their presence known and just wrecked the game plan to go that high, I question that, honestly, from a standpoint of evaluating talent. I just don't know how that happens.
Especially Rashawn Gary. He's elite talent. He is no doubt about his talent, but he did not necessarily put it all together on a very underwhelming on the field. And he's obviously still getting drafted based on his talent and his athletic ability. He's definitely a guy that very under, you know, Devin Bush had a lot of big games, but Gary was very underwhelming for his talent level.
And
another
Michigan
State player, Jonathan Abram.
Yeah. Oh, that's a guy that This is crazy, too. So I think, again, everyone was pretty shocked, I would say, too. As Curtis is talking about not getting drafted cornerback wise, what about the first wide receiver going Marquise Brown? I mean, Metcalf I thought was going to be, you know, obviously a higher wide receiver from what they were saying, you know, but what do you say about that, Rob?
No. I think Marquise Brown is clearly the best wide receiver in this draft. I've always felt that way. He's got the deep threat ability. He has the hands. He can play in the slot. He can play in the flanker. And so, I mean, he can do a lot more. I think he's a lot more versatility. I think Metcalf has the ability. He's got to prove that he can stay healthy. Obviously, when you look at his frame, unbelievable. I mean, I have him as the second-best wide receiver in the draft. But, I mean, I think he's a distant second behind Marquise Brown. I think there's a big gap when you look at the production and you look at what Marquise Brown has been able to do. You know, on the football field. But Marquise Brown is clearly the best wide receiver in this draft. If you look at the corner position, my number one corner is Byron Murphy from Washington. He hasn't got picked yet. My second corner, Greedy Williams from LSU. And then in third corner, DeAndre Baker from Georgia. Those are the top three corners I have in the draft. Neither one of them got picked yet.
That's crazy. And you know what, Dre, to your question, I think, and that's why I feel so flummoxed about the Michigan players. They get the same treatment, but they go in the top 12. But you talk about those, both of those Ole Miss wide receivers still sitting out there. And I think the reason why they fall is because, like, how are you two guys buying to be in the first round? But y'all was on the field at the same time, and what y'all go,
mm-hmm.
you know, 6-6, 7-5. I think that's
uh-huh.
working against them in this draft. But for whatever reason, it didn't work against the Michigan defensive players. That's why I'm like, how do you do it for one set, but don't do it for the other set?
Yep. And Metcalf clearly has the athletic ability, but you just don't have enough on tape.
We saw the
two tight ends from Iowa go in the first round. And I thought, you know, from some of the stuff I was studying, I was thinking New England was going to make a move for one of those guys, was going to maybe package or I bet New England was hoping one of those two guys from Iowa was going to be there when they got a chance to get there. And I think they have a need to try to find, and it's not, New England's been doing that. I remember when they had two tight ends, two excellent Pro Bowl tight ends. So I think that's on their mind, especially with the loss of Gronk, is trying to figure out who's the third best tight end on the board. Because I think that's what New England's going to be looking at.
What do
you
think about
Alabama? That's probably the next tight end on the board.
Yep, you took the right from the top.
What do you think about that 17th pick for the Giants, that Lawrence, that was he a defensive tackle or no defensive end?
Tackle from Clemson.
What do you guys think about him?
I think both of the Giants pick were a bit of a reach. I had Lawrence going like 31 of the Rams. I think his value was somewhere between 25 and 32, and they took him at 17. So I think obviously a good football player. But the Giants passed up on some pretty good edge rushers at that spot too. And I think they reached on Lawrence a bit. I definitely think they reached on Daniel Jones. Definitely a bit of a reach. At best, I have they got two picks. I mean, they have quantity, but in my opinion, they didn't get quality and value with their picks.
I agree. But Dexter Lawrence, I think he has the tape, though. And as we talked about dudes playing and not playing in big games, that dude has been in big games, and he's excelled in big games. So sometimes that can make you artificially rise where the other pieces where the pundits say, I'm going, you should go here. I agree, based off all the sliding we've seen, that he wasn't going to go that high. But I would give them a pass on that pick because his production, on tape is okay. He's played in big games and he's produced in big games, and I can see them doing that. The Daniel Jones pick, no answer.
Yeah. And nervously, you talk about the tight end position. I kind of have a 33 to 45 kind of range for Irv Smith Jr. It wouldn't be too big of a reach for New England to take him at 32, but I kind of have a high second-round grade on Irv Smith Jr.
And just lastly, I'll say about the Patriots, and as much as we talk about them, just because they don't have, Gronk retiring, watch freaking Bill Belichick do something different, kind of retweak that offense to kind of go a different direction too, have like five running backs or something crazy like that, what I'm saying? So he'll figure out a way to kind of get the best weapons or figure out the best way how to adjust that squad, even if they don't have like two tight ends or, another like one great tight end, maybe they'll go three wides or whatever too. So they always figure out something, try to definitely get the best out of what they are trying to draft too. So good stuff from everyone too as well. Let's talk about the top five QBs in the draft, Rob.
Well, Kyler Murray, obviously. You can question his height and things of that nature. But definitely when you talk about athletic ability, when you're talking about throwing the football with accuracy, the way he can move in the pocket, he's the guy in the draft. And Lincoln Riley, how about that? 2 years in a row have produced a quarterback to be a number one pick. Unbelievable. My second guy was Dwayne Haskins. Even though he was a 31 pick, he was my second best quarterback in the draft. When you look at his production, 50 touchdown passes.
There were some questions about his mobility, but the way I look at it, he moves in the pocket really well. He finds his windows, these passing lanes. He steps up in the pocket really well. Daniel Jones just doesn't have the arm strength, in my opinion. Decent athletic ability. You know, his accuracy has shown some improvement. But I had Jones as the fourth guy. My third guy was Drew Locke. And then when you look at the fifth position, I kind of have Will Greer and Ryan Finley, West Virginia and North Carolina State quarterback, kind of tied there in that fifth spot. Those two guys will possibly go in the second and third round.
You can go ahead and talk to the West Coast. I have nothing else to add to that. I totally agree with that from Ross' perspective. That was baffling by the Giants, truly.
Well, it was good to see that we had a lineman from the Pac-12. I think it was a right tackle or left tackle.
DeAndre Dillon.
In the first round. Did he go to Washington?
He went to Philadelphia.
That's probably a pretty good situation.
I think he's the best pass protector in the draft.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you need some work on his on the run blocking. But he's definitely the best pass protector in the draft. And the Chargers take Jerry Tillery, defensive tackle, Notre Dame.
Ooh, that's a great pick by the Chargers right there. A great value pick.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Look at that. Keeping it smooth. Wow. All right, let's talk about this.
The curious thing, and where I'm curious at, I'm really curious the mindset and of the New England Patriots, like I mentioned before. I'm also really curious about, because I believe Pete Carroll is a great evaluator of young talent. You know, since Pete Carroll's been in Seattle, even including back to where they went and got Matt Flynn, and then all of a sudden Russell Wilson, before the season started, Pete Carroll had to tell Matt Flynn, look, you're not going to be the starter here. You know, even way back to that. And so Seattle, you know, they made that trade, and they went and got some more draft picks. And so it's going to be – I'm really curious about what Pete – where he's at and what he's going to do.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. And I think it'd be good to kind of talk about since we're talking kind of about the Seahawks and Pete Carroll, that was an interesting trade that they made between the Chiefs. They were actually the Seahawks send their defensive end, what's his name, Clark, to the Chiefs for a couple picks, Frank Clark. And I guess with that, they lost when they're obviously one of the top rushers here, but they get like a ton of picks. So, again, looks like, you know, if you're Pete Carroll, maybe you're winning because you know how to pick certain characters or certain players, if you will, Rob. So what do you think about that one?
Well, you know, this was kind of, you know, Frank Clark is obviously not Khalil Mack, so I don't want to say that. But, man, when you trade a guy that's a pass rusher, you know, I'll say this all the time. Because when you have a great quarterback, when you got a great left tackle, and you got an elite pass rusher and elite corners, man, those positions are hard to get. And those are the most important positions in football, in my opinion. And so, in my opinion, I can't see why the Seahawks make that trade and get rid of Frank Clark. I know you just gave Russell Wilson a lot of money, and maybe that was an issue there with paying Frank Clark. But, man, you give up, and, you know, Frank Clark is – last 3 to 4 years, he's one of the top four highest sack guys in the league. And so you give him an elite pass rusher. Obviously, you know, now they got back-to-back picks coming up, so we're going to see what they're going to do here with 29 and 30. They traded down from 21 to get more picks. You know, they went into this, before the trade, they only had 5 picks in this draft. So obviously, I guess it was a thing where Pete Carroll wanted to get more picks. And he did accomplish that, and I just got some more by trading down from 21. But, man, I just, you know, when you give up an elite pass rusher like that, to me it's just hard to justify that.
Yeah, but he's told you. He wants to have it like a college atmosphere where dudes graduate and he brings in other guys so they compete so he can have that USC kind of mentality. So I'm not overly surprised. I'm going to take it from a different angle and look at Kansas City. Didn't they just let D-Fort leave and then you trade for – him, Frank, and then give him that money? It's like, well, what about the guy that you had that was productive that you didn't like? that you let him go and you went to get the money that you could have gave him and gave him capital to go get, you know, Frank Clark. I'm not saying Clark is a bum by any stretch of the imagination. I just want to know the mechanics of that, of why you let one go to just go get another one. Dean Clark, you gave up not more maybe money-wise, but draft capital you gave up more when you had that dude in the building. I was a little shocked at that from Kansas City's standpoint, not that Frank Clark is not a good player.
Yep, there it is. The last thing I'm going to talk about, too, and we'll let you guys kind of talk about your squad. I know, like, you guys, Cowboys will have the first round. We still have your first round pick, obviously, with your boy Antonio. But talk about your squad, JQ. Are you okay with the pick here that you got? Man, I know we're going to talk about that. And that kind of our we weren't sure what was going to happen. So, obviously, Jonah Williams is a solid pick from Alabama. But were you expecting that? And there goes the Georgia, the pipeline to Georgia, if you will. But tell us about that, JQ.
Well, I guess my piece of it is I look at it from you get Zach Taylor from the Rams and you say, okay, can we do for Andy Dalton with, you know, we did out in L.A. for Jared Goff. So if I look at that through that prism, they said, okay, we feel like we can. What else do we need to do? We've got A.J. Green. We got another good young wide receiver. I'm sorry, just lost his name, from Pittsburgh. You got Mixon in the backfield. What can we do to maximize him in terms of the routes and the concept that we want to have? We need to protect him better. We messed up by letting Whitworth go. We try to go get another offensive tackle, and we try to build that line in front of him. And I'm looking at it from that, so I'm trying to talk myself into it. But my goodness, Andy Dalton must have all the dirty pictures on everybody in the Cincinnati organization. Just think about it like this. He has no guaranteed money left on his contract. They could cut him tomorrow if they drafted a quarterback and move on if they wanted to, or let him groom him for the next year and say, okay, you and your contract, you'll walk away by. It's not like they owe him all kind of dead money against the cap if they cut him. I just don't know what else he sees him unless he's just got dirty pictures, or if they're going to say we're going to give Dak Taylor 1 year to have a Jared Goff kind of effect on him by improving the offensive line. Anything outside of that, I'm struggling for when you watch, you know, Jackson in Baltimore, when you're watching Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. You got to be able to have a younger quarterback now to compete with those teams into the next decade. And Andy Dalton's not that dude. You're not waiting on Andy Dalton at 42. Like, you know what, Andy Dalton got one more year left in him. No, he don't. Andy Dalton was done at 31. He might have been done at 28. And you still talking about that? Like, come on, man. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a chance.
Yeah, well, I understand your viewpoint, but, you know, if you just talk about the player, Jonah Williams, you know, he's a guy I had going number 10 in my last mock draft. So from a value standpoint, you got good value in the player himself. And what you like about him is his versatility. You know, a lot of scouts believe he can play all five positions on the offensive line. In my opinion, he can play four to five positions. The only position I wouldn't play him at is center. So, you know, he has that versatility where he'd be that guy that can play either guard spot, either tackle spot. So, I mean, you like that aspect of him. Where your holes on the offensive line, he can kind of plug and play and start from day one.
Yeah, but if you can't throw the ball for completion, probably what good does it happen if he can stand back for 5 seconds
to
the ground?
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying if we just talking about the player, that's what you're getting.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that. No, don't get me wrong. This is not Jonah Williams bash. I like Jonah Williams. I think that he's a good – I really think he's a good player. But I feel like even if you protect him, you don't, he's still Andy freaking Dalton. And that's where I come back to it. Can I find a way to pack him off the line to maybe get into a better offensive line situation in this draft, but have my quarterback for the future already in the building?
It might trade you for Josh Rose.
Man, it's
not I don't want to.
Josh.
It ain't over.
Yeah. I don't want to talk bad about
it. They might be drafting
Jordan
Williams to protect Josh Rose.
I don't want to talk bad about Cincinnati, but I'm looking at the landscape. Cincinnati's in the division. I don't – Andy Dalton or anybody, they are going to be – I don't see any way how they're not on the bottom of that division.
Agreed.
Coming up next season for sure. And
yep.
I don't see the future for them in a division where Cleveland's on the rise, Pittsburgh's a stalwart, and Baltimore, you know, those three franchises are monsters. And Cincinnati, the over and under on Cleveland is 7. It might be a good bet to do the over on Cleveland. That might be a really good bet. Yeah.
Yes, it is. But I won't call him a stalwart, but I see what you're saying. I agree with you. That's my point about not taking Haskins. You have to have your quarterback in the future. I don't want to take up the show with Cincinnati. So that was just my own personal view.
Gotcha. Well, like I said, we got about 24 minutes here. I guess we can do any last-minute talks, you guys. So I do really – I know we want to get to some more NBA talk, too. The playoffs are just wrapped up, too. The question is I'll ask Mr. Rob, can Kyler Murray lead the NFL franchise? And then, obviously, we'll talk about some expectations for Quinnen Williams here as well, too. So go ahead with that, Rob.
Well, I know there's some concerns from Kyler Murray from a leadership perspective. I think, obviously the young quarterback that's coming into the league, I think that's going to eventually grow on him. He's going to grow into that role. Obviously, you can't doubt his talent and what he can do on the football field. I'm interested to see, how Cliff Kingsbury can operate as a head coach in the NFL. I'm still not sold on him as a head coach in the NFL. And, can he build a complete football team? Can he build an exciting offense? Probably so. Build a complete football team. That's going to be interesting. I think Kyler Murray can leave a team. I'm concerned whether Cliff Kingsbury can leave a team.
I'm a quarterback. He's a rookie head coach. The jury's always out on him until you see it happen. You've seen some rookie head coaches here lately do well, but we also have a list of rookie head coaches that have bombed. So the jury's out on Kingsbury. Does he have the offense? Maybe. It might work in the NFL, but when I look at Russell Wilson, Russell Wilson has always been thicker, and they always want to give Kyler Murray that Russell Wilson comparison. And I know they're both short and can both move around and run a little bit, but I just don't know if Kyler can take the rigors of being hit like that over a 16-game season. So he has the talent, but I worry about his stature. But, sometimes when you're right there, who else would you take number one in this draft? Me and Mike talked about it the other day. There's nobody that I just looked at and said, that guy, number one, with a bullet, and nobody would even question us. That guy doesn't, to me, exist in this draft. So they said, I'm going to go upside. And they said, who's got the greatest upside? Kyler Murray. So let's take Kyler Murray. I feel like that's what happened with Arizona. We'll see.
Yep. And Arizona definitely still had to improve their offense and defensive line. They have to get that in the trenches.
Well, I wonder.
That has to be a focus.
I wonder if, and I heard this, there's a possibility that Kyler Murray is selling season tickets down there in Arizona. There's a possibility that he got the fan base excited. Let's buy some tickets. And I think that's a little bit of what he's doing. And I also think the ownership down there are putting him on the plank. Here's the team. We need you to win. Do what you have to. Do what you know. We want to sell tickets down here and we want to win. So what ideas do you got? Let's see them.
Yeah, that could be it. That could be it. You definitely have more of an exciting product on the field for sure. That's a good call, Curtis, because, again, if you look at the whole, you talk about landscape, if you will, if you look at Arizona, obviously you have an aging Larry Fitzgerald. David Johnson had a rough year, and the offensive line, as Rob mentioned, that needs to be adjusted too. But now if you kind of say, hey, here's a smoke screen, look, we've got, an exciting young player, we've got a new coach, going to bring this new style, then yeah, it's going to definitely do well to sell tickets. So I can definitely see why they made that decision. And like you said, JQ, nothing's been proven yet. But again, if you're losing, hopefully you're hoping, hey, let's lose with a bang. Let's get something exciting. Let's have some fun with this. And it can't be any worse than what they had last year, to say the least, man. So again, we'll see how the other shoe falls with Josh Rosen, if you will, because again, you know, we were making jokes about it as we're texting. You know, he's heard about this. He's been, you know, a model citizen, coming to the offices and workouts. But, you know, in the back of his mind, man, you know, this is, you know, he's pissed, man. So, you know, it is what it is, man. So, you know, I don't care who you are, man. You know, somebody got drafted to take your job, man. It is what it is, man. So that's what we've got for that. And if you have any last comments, we can definitely do that. But I definitely, without further ado, want to get some time in. We got to talk some NBA here. And I know we got to definitely talk about, I guess, what West Coast had the floor in a quick second here to see what you guys talk about. Congratulations to the Blazers guys, too, man. So there you go.
Dame Lillard, man, that was an incredible shot the other night.
That was a bad shot, by the way.
Well, I want to give you a quote from Damian Lillard on the eve of Game 5.
He waved bye-bye to OKC, too. Wow.
No. Right. This is before the game. This is the night before the game. He said, I'm going to get the last laugh to the Portland fans. I promise you that. And, you know, with that, I want to go back to last week when we were talking about Portland going up 2-0 at home. And I heard a lot of people say, well, you know, you just won at home until you went on the road. You know, you really haven't done anything. Well, if you've won two games, you're already halfway there. And I thought they were going to initially win that first game there and maybe lose the second game, but they did. They split there. And I want to give you a little history on the teams that have gone 2-0 in the last 10 years. There have been 79 teams in the playoffs that have gone 2-0 to go on and win the series. Teams that have come back from an 0-2 deficit, there have been only 6 teams. Portland was one of them, 2016. OKC was another one when they had Kevin Durant in 2012. And so every game is important. So that's why we were so excited about winning both games against a team like OKC. For us to win that game and Damian Lillard to, you know, do what he did, which that's something that, you know, in a game-winning shot, game-winning three-point shot, in NBA history, a game-winning three-point shot to end the series. There have only been 6 players to do that. And Damian Lillard has done it twice. And I want to address Paul George. He said that Damian Lillard took a bad shot. Damian Lillard was 8-for-12 from 30 feet or beyond. The rest of the playoff teams in the NBA this year combined were 6-for-38. Now, maybe for them it was a bad shot. But for Damian Lillard, who was guarded by Paul George, and Paul George also guarded C.J. McCollum on his last 2 shots, one of them to tie the game, the other one Dame to win the game. He kind of took a page out of Russell Westbrook's Russell Westbrook's kind of mentality. Paul George, is better than that. And instead of saying something like that, he should have said, hey, congratulations, that was a great shot. Because everybody in the country knows what kind of a shot it was, you know. And everybody will be talking about that shot for a long time. I want to address Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook, he's this player that travels, and he only knows one speed, 100 miles an hour. Sometimes the game has got to be slowed down a little bit to 50 miles an hour or 75 miles an hour. It can't always be at 100 miles an hour. And my analogy of Russell Westbrook is, you know, he's got the speed of a greyhound, and he's got the body of a pit bull, but he's got the mind of a basset hound. And I think that, as Curtis said before, he wanted, he wanted us to go against OKC. I wasn't sure just on how they beat us in this series. You know, losing our center the way we did. I want to give a big shout out, of course, to to Cantor, who this last game with a separated shoulder in the first quarter to play, you know, three quarters with a separated shoulder, go in and get a shot at halftime and keep playing out there. He played well. He played well against Adams. And I thought Adams could have been their bread and butter if they had just played more team ball. But Cantor did the job against him. And so, with that said, do you guys have any questions for us?
Well, not necessarily questions, but I mentioned it on the show last week. Dame Lillard really responded in this series. You know, last year in the playoffs, he really didn't show up. I mean, Jrue Holiday just pretty much shut him down, and he's really responded this year. And he's pretty bold. I mean, he played with some cockiness. He played with a lot of confidence. I mean, the dagger and then wave bye-bye to the OKC bench. I mean, that was some great television, right there. And, he has really responded to be a big-time player, and he really just thoroughly outplayed Russell Westbrook that entire series. And, I don't even think it was close. I mean, he just thoroughly outplayed him. And if you're OKC, you got to have some questions about Russell Westbrook. Ever since Kevin Durant has left OKC, OKC has the fewest passes in the league than any team since Kevin Durant has left OKC. So the ball gets stuck in his hand when he has the ball in his hand. So an incredible player, incredible talent. But you got to have some questions. You got to start thinking long term with Russell Westbrook if you're OKC.
Shit, they just gave him all that money.
And he said that.
You said something.
And I want to key you guys on to something. If you guys have been listening, and because we live here, and I've been listening. That series was about, for the Portland Trailblazers, their mindset and this chip and this little anger they got. Because if you listen to some of those, they've all mentioned it. That swept, being swept last year in that first round, woke the guy up. And right after that sweep last year, and they talked about it. They talked about they heard about that here in town the whole summer. They heard about that was the issue coming into this season of what happened in that playoff when they got swept. And they got together. And Damian got the Damian said it here in Portland. I'm the leader. It's my fault. I am the man here in Portland, Oregon. And I'm not going to let my team, he said that right after the sweep, I'm not going to let my team do nothing like that again. And so this series definitely was about what happened last year.
You know what's crazy about it is it's almost a pick your poison piece here in the Western Conference because they got a harder draw in the first round, Oklahoma City, so to speak. And you're right, Russell Westbrook has to spend the summer not dunking but shooting three-pointers and further two-point shots because when a team is saying, hey, back up, let him shoot, and you're Russell Westbrook, that's got to be deflating. It's got to be eye-opening to say, hey, I got to prove my game. These dudes are daring me to shoot, not meek. So you got to see that piece of it through Russell Westbrook. But for Portland, we can talk about all these other series that may be coming up, and the Golden State Houston, the Golden State can get their shit together, and then what's happening in the Eastern Conference. But that Portland, probably Denver series is going to be really, really exciting. You're talking about led by the backcourt and a little Jokic mixed in for Denver. I can see them beating Denver. And then what are the expectations then when they face either Houston or Golden State? Presumably we think that's going to be what's going to happen on the other side of the draw. What happens then for Portland? I give a ton of credit. He took all of the mocking from Westbrook and from shoulder, you know, with Dame time and on his wrist and whatnot, and came back and hit a dagger. I mean, an absolute dagger shot against Oklahoma City. They're going to play that for years and years to come. It is. It's ridiculous, and I give him a ton of credit for that. But what happens with the expectations going into that Denver series where everybody's going to look up and say, hey, that's just Denver. They got a whole bunch of young guys. We're supposed to win that series. Can they carry that same kind of vitriol that they have for Oklahoma City into that series against San Antonio? And if they get past that, ooh-wee, what do they do with Golden State or Houston?
I agree, but I think Golden State have a legitimate shot of beating Denver. I mean, Joker is a flat-out beast in the low post, man. They're almost unstoppable to guard. But I think other than that, Portland wins a lot of those other matchups on the floor outside of Joker's. And, I think the Blazers would have a shot against Denver, a very good shot, a legitimate shot at beating them in the next round if Denver advances. Obviously, the Spurs just took them to the woodshed tonight in the fourth quarter. And but, I mean, obviously the Spurs are going to be tough out in the seven games. But, you know, you got to like Portland's chances against either one of those teams.
And I think Portland can get ahead of themselves. I think they circled the wagon on Nurkic's injury. They got it together. They talked about it as a team, one step at a time. I don't respect. It's just me, and I've just seen them a bit. I don't respect Denver, and I pick San Antonio to win that series. I don't think the Portland Trail Blazers are going to be playing the Denver Nuggets. I think the Portland Trail Blazers are going to be playing the San Antonio Spurs. And then there's a tie in there. With San Antonio coming to town, that's LaMarcus Aldridge coming back. That's LaMarcus Aldridge coming back. And this current roster and this current team that we have is a result of when LaMarcus left Portland. So that's going to be another one of those must-watch TVs. But I'm also going to say something here. Okay. I'm listening on the radio. I listen to the game on the radio. Nurkic coming back into the stand was huge for the Blazers. He was at home, and he got in his car. And he came to the stadium, and he got there with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That gave them a big boost. But the poignant thing to me is, if you guys remember, Russell Wilson ran down the court and missed a layup, and Damian got the ball and dribbled out the clock, moved everybody out of the way. I got this. But Russell, right before that, missed that layup.
So they had put when Nurk got there, they put his face up on the, screen, and everybody's already standing, and the place is already nuts, and it just got even louder. And I think it was, those fans' mojo, that will to win. Because with 7 minutes and 58 seconds left, we're down by 15 points. And they just kept chipping away. And I told my dad, we were watching it at home on my 65-inch TV, and I said, if they can just get a few stops, and then they got a stop, and then they got a steal. And one of the best steals was Seth Curry. He stole the ball, kind of snuck in there, wrapped around a guy, stole the ball, gave him behind the back, bounce pass to Mo Heartless. And I want to give credit to Mo Heartless and both Aminu, who played excellent in this series. They just came in, and some of the stuff didn't even show up on the, on the stats, but they were just hustling, banging, diving, and making stuff difficult for those guys. So it was great. It was great to see. I want you guys to ask me one question, though. Ask me one question about the game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, ask a question.
Ask a question about the game. Anyway, go ahead.
Like I said, I don't necessarily have a, you know, a question. I just more so.
I want a question. I want a question.
All three, y'all got a question.
I got a question. We're gonna
How far the blades are gonna go? Okay. How far the blades are gonna go? That's my question.
You said
next question. He said next question.
Next question.
Oh my God.
Yeah, next question.
We're giving you a lot of props about that, what an excellent game Dan went, and he was laser focused in what happened last year. Obviously, it was a huge motivation, and everything that he said did come true. But I guess the question that we're going to flip it, and as we get ready to get to the OT portion, I guess the question is, what should, how does it happen with OKC? What should it do with Russell Westbrook? Because the fact that, and this is probably one of his tougher games, and I don't know what the deal was, but what's the future? And like you said, no offense to what happened to, you know, we're going to still talk about Blazers because obviously they did the thing, but I guess the thing is that you're looking at is what's the next step for Russell? And I'll let Rob and try to be as soon as possible because we got a little bit of time. We got to jump right into the OT right at this. We got like 3 minutes here, but go ahead.
Well, Russell Westbrook, you know, said after the game, you know, he said they asked him that specific question, and he said what he does is he's going to look within himself and figure out what he can do. And he's loved. He's loved in OKC because he was the one that stayed. But from, you know, listening to some of the talk radio guys, they love him less and less for his antics. So if he pulls back from that, if they can rein that in, he can shine.
Okay. JQ?
I'm sorry. Yeah. What was the question again about Russell?
What are we going to do with him?
I mean, you said he's getting that big contract. You can't do nothing with him but try to build around him. I mean, I don't know if Paul George is going to answer. Paul George was actually playing out of his mind before he got hurt. So that may work, and they're still very dangerous when they're healthy. But until that dude can hit a jump shot coming off the screen when people go underneath every time, they're dead. They're DOA. This is the NBA that we live in. You just can't go 100 miles an hour to the rim. And like Curtis said, you know, you got to be able to find a way to you know, diversify your portfolio, so to speak. So until he finds a way to be able to knock that shot down coming off the screen, they're gonna be in the same situation every year. It's just it is what it is.
Hey Rob, so the OT portion real quick. We got 2 minutes here. Let's do this.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for tuning in to another live edition of Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Hopefully you enjoyed our draft coverage on tonight. And, of course, NBA, we still got a little bit more NBA to cover here in our OT portion, so you don't want to miss it. So please click on the same link on tomorrow, Saturday, get the rest of our show. We're going to be back on the air on Sunday night. So we're going to go on 2 days rest. We're going to be right back on the air in a couple of days. Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Once again, we're going to be back on the air on Sunday night. We'll get to recap the entire draft as well as get you updated on the NBA playoffs. You don't want to miss it. Good night, people.
Yeah, I'm in a quandary here because my Rares are playing the Braves. I know we took game one and the Braves beat us yesterday. But I have no golly idea how they stopped the game again after like 2.5 hour rain delay in Cincinnati where the Rares was winning. Now it's 3-2. So now the draft is over, that's where I'm going to go to. But please, all the baseball guys, please let the Rares get the series so I don't have to hear it every day of my life until they come down here in August. That's all I ask for. Appreciate everybody for listening to the show. We appreciate you. And send us your thoughts and your shout-outs about the draft, and we will incorporate them in the show. Good night, people.
Nice. I wish Todd was here to fill his little thoughts. It's all good, man. Like I said, again, I don't expect too much here. I kind of sit back and I kind of observe things, and I wasn't going to figure that up because we had so much to talk about, JQ, with the NFL, and obviously being the highlight of the night, too. And obviously I knew that West Coast, like Curtis and Gary, were going to be excited about the Blazers, too, man. So I figured that would kind of be a small little nugget on the show. But like I said, again, it's good. We got our little win, you know, like I said, and the Reds are not making it easy by any means. So you should be proud about that, sir. So let's have some fun with it, man. Just as we kind of like wrap this up, as we get rid of the OT portion, which has been one of the weirdest nights ever I've been a part of, I do want to kind of talk about really briefly about Greg Popovich and what's happening with the Spurs right now. And I guess the question is, is he getting out coached? And I know we're fishing the OT portion too, guys. So, you know, that's a question that it's almost surprising to actually ask, but in your opinion, Rob, what do you think is happening right now with the Spurs in this particular series?
Well, actually, I think he's out coaching Mike Malone, actually. but this game to go
the question
the series
said
to go seven
coached.
Games. And, yeah. No, and yeah, he's definitely making all the right moves. You know, but it's a game of chess. And he's obviously, they're taking the team that's obviously been better than them all year long. Now, albeit Denver's a fairly young team. They've been the second best team in the Western Conference all year,
now
but they're
team,
a young
though.
Team. And the Spurs are, you know, a veteran team with some veteran players. They have LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan, guys that have, you know, some playoff life here. But just some of the moves that that he's been able to make. I mean, Derek White, moving him over to the point guard position has been phenomenal. He's playing outstanding in the series. But, yeah, and Rudy Gay is even contributing. He's got to be about 85 years old, and he's even, you know, contributing on the basketball court. You know, Greg Popovich has rejuvenated him as well. And obviously in the playoffs, you got a little bit more breaks between games too. So I think that's also helping the Spurs. But I think for the most part, if you're watching this series closely, he's making the right chess moves for the Spurs and able to extend this series to seven games.
Listen, any question where you talk about Greg Popovich being outcoached is just ridiculous because he can outcoach most people in his sleep. The problem with San Antonio is LaMarcus Aldridge is a good player, but he's a complimentary player. You've downgraded, and I know they traded for Kawhi for DeMar, and everybody was like, ooh. But DeMar DeRozan can't handle Kawhi Leonard's jockstrap. He's also a complimentary player. So now you're looking at San Antonio without a go-to player with a bunch of complimentary players with a good coach. And the thing about having a good coach is he got them to the seventh game, where another coach probably would have been knocked out. I like Murray from Denver. He hasn't established himself all the way yet in terms of the pantheon of players in the NBA, but he's a really solid, super solid player for Denver. And then you got Jokic in the middle. But I just look at San Antonio now as having a collection of role players, but not having a dominant player. We had a Tim Duncan and a Parker Ginobili and even a Kawhi Leonard. Now you have DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. They're not the same quality of leading the stars, and it's just playing itself out that way.
I don't have any respect for Denver. And this question you just asked really, really, truly sets up what's going to happen. I think that game is Sunday. I think that the game seven will be Sunday, maybe Saturday. But this seventh game looks like, and I'm going to see, but this looks like this is a perfect setup for Popovich to get this done. And I think they're going to do in Denver, and I think it's going to be about Popovich knowing how to get that done. And so, but and then on the hindsight on that, if we got Denver would have the home court. If we get San Antonio, we have the Portland Trailblazers have the home court. So, but the good news in this whole thing too for Portland is healing up, resting up. Let these guys go seven. Let these guys beat up, extend it, give me 3-4 more days to get ready for you. And that's nothing but a good thing.
Nice. All right.
I also think that San Antonio is going to win it game seven. What do you guys think? You think the Denver's going to win it? I mean, other than their center, you know, they're a bunch of role players too. And so with that said, who do you pick and why in game seven?
You think Murray is a role player? I would disagree with that. That young boy from Kentucky is getting ready to be a stud, I think, in this league. Yeah. I think he's on that plane with Donovan Mitchell. I think to call him a role player is a disservice to what he can do. Now, if you want to talk about Millsap and some of those other guys, I'll give you that. But Murray and Jokic are for real. I think Portland has more of the experience and it's going to be a guard-oriented game, which lends itself to them being more successful and also with their experience. The only thing I wonder is can Portland get up again like they got up from Oklahoma City? They were jacked for Oklahoma City because they've got Lewis and they've got Westbrook. Can they get up for Murray and Jokic? Is my only question. They have the talent to do it, no doubt. But I quibble with this with the semantics of Murray being a role player. I think he's a little bit better than you give him credit for.
All right. I'll give you that. Do you think that they're the ones that you think they're going to beat San Antonio in Game 7? Then that's what you're saying.
Yeah, in the Mile High, I think so. If it was in San Antonio, I'd be more worried about them. But I think they find a way to do it because, again, I just don't believe in DeMar DeRozan. That's why nobody believes in Toronto is because of the DeMar DeRozan effect. He's just 1 year removed away from that, right? So I just don't think he has the goods when the chips are on the line, and him and Aldridge, to be honest, to be the go-to guys. So I think Denver finds a way to win that series. But I still would take Portland against either one of those teams. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think it's as big of a gap as you think it is my only point. But I still take Portland against either one.
Yeah, the way Dame Lillard is playing right now, I would definitely take Portland too.
I don't think Portland's gonna have any problem getting up for either one of those teams. To be quite honest with you, I mean, absolutely, they were, you know, with Schroeder and, you know, and Westbrook running their mouths for, you know, really all season, and going into this game, and even this game, this last game here in Rip City, Westbrook, right before the game, he runs around the entire court and he taunts the Blazer fans. Instead of getting himself ready, he's running around, and who's over there? Schroeder's over there pointing at Lillard and pointing at his wrist like, yeah, we're going to see if it's Dame time, you know. So they were already taunting, you know, the Blazers beforehand instead of really worrying about maybe stealing the game and going home and maybe getting back into this series. But I do think that you're right about Aldridge. There have been games throughout his career where he wasn't big down the stretch. This is going to be his time. We'll see. Whose team is it? Is it LaMarcus Aldridge's team, San Antonio? We'll see.
I want to talk about something, and it came up, and Jerry just talked about it, and all of us have played sports. I believe that. I don't know that, you know, I can't swear on the Bible to that, but I believe all of us have played sports. And what I want to talk about, because I play a bunch of them, and these guys, and I mean, I'm pretty sure we've all been around what would be known as a doo-doo talker or the S-H-I-T talker in our sports. And even, you know, and I played them all, and I never thought going into the blocks on a track meet in the 100-yard dash that somebody would tell me, I'm going to come out of these blocks so fast, all you're going to see is my big black, woo! Whoa, hey now, hey! I don't think you're going to beat me, buddy, but you can talk all the doo-doo you want to. And those guys that did do that in basketball, wrestling, track and field, Football was interesting. When I had those guys that would talk a lot of crap in football, I was burying a lot of those guys on the football field. I was putting my helmet right through their chest and putting them on the ground and step right over them because they would get to me. And I didn't like it. I didn't retaliate because I wasn't a talker and I wasn't like that. But those guys could get me fired up, and they can get me on my best of what I was doing in a sport. And Oklahoma City had a bunch of that. And Damian said that in an interview, we're not going to listen to the referees. We're not going to listen to that crap. We are going to just listen to us. And we're going to get it done. And I think that's
And I think that's the mindset for this team going forward. Is it going to be easy against either one of those teams? It won't be. It's never easy going against Popovich's team. You know, he's a proven phenomenal head coach. And Denver's, you know, they won the division. You know, they won the Northwest, and they played well. So neither one of those, but we're really excited because we feel like we have a chance to get to the Western Conference Finals. And I just want the Rockets and the Warriors to just beat each other to death.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Hey,
well, they're going to.
Yes, yeah. For the sake of the East Coasters, I know we got to wrap this up, especially we don't want us being like fading tomorrow too. So we got 5 minutes left here. I want you to say your last little piece as we get ready to wrap up another fantastic issue of Talking Sports with the Talk Man. So you know how we do, go around, and then we'll wrap it up too. So you can do your last thoughts, whatever you want to talk about. Keep it really brief, again, for the sake of the East Coasters, if you don't mind. So go ahead. Go ahead, Rob.
Rob might already be down.
I'm having a problem with the Cardinal fan.
No, I still see him. Hold on, what happened? All right, JQ, you have to fill in the gap here. That's kind of weird because it looks like something's happened with that too, but go ahead.
I'm good with that. You know, that's unlike Rob to have it. He might be sitting there talking on mute. For me today is having to put some faith into the new coach in Cincinnati and the Bengals for that and not picking a quarterback and leaving Haskins on the board and saying, okay, I'm going to try to do for Andy what I did for Jared Goff and build a line around him and bring some innovative kind of play calling to him and see if he can do it. And then say, okay, if not, I move on to a quarterback next year if he doesn't pan out, because, like I said, they have no guaranteed money left in him. So as fans, it's short for fanatics, and we get real riled up and wild about the picks. And like you know, Curtis said earlier that, you know, our Gary, rather, their dudes that whose livelihoods are about this, and they know more about it than we do. So I'm going to sit back and watch and see what happens with it, and hopefully it pans out. And you know, I'm just, again, I'm rooting for my Reds to find a way, to find a freaking way to hang on and beat the Braves to take 2 or 3. So that's just where I am today.
True to that, just kind of like piggybacking what you said, too, I'm going to say the same thing slightly just because, again, you know, supposedly you kind of have this whole trusting the decision here because, you know, obviously the Falcons selected Chris Lindstrom, who I thought was a little high. You know, maybe I wanted a Juwan Taylor if you thought we needed a tackle. But, again, we'll sit back. We'll see what's happening. We thought we signed 2 guards. So, you know, again, we don't know what's happening. But we're going to have faith, as you said, and we're going to see how everything plays out too. So that's what I'm going to leave off with, and I hope that the Braves can somehow, again, find a way to get that series as well. West Coast, what you got to say as we wrap
up? If you look at the Jaguars right now, they got the first pick of the second round. They have an opportunity to get Juwan Taylor here. And they definitely need help on the offensive line. They definitely need help on the defensive line. So we'll see. Interesting to see, you know, why Juwan Taylor has fallen so much. But if you're the Jaguars, that's the guy. If you got the first pick of the second round on tomorrow, and if you come away with Kyler Murray and Juwan Taylor, you're getting off to a really good start here in this draft. So it's
I think that it's to Caleb McCary too, by the way.
Yeah.
This is for you guys, too, for our Washington guys. You know, we picked up Caleb McCary. So you got anything to say about him really quickly? We just got him. We tried to grab him from the Washington guys. What you got to say about him?
Well, if you're looking at the Falcons here, obviously, you know, both of their picks, in my opinion, I don't think they got great value. But the one message that the Falcons are sending is that they have to fix their offensive line. And, you know, Matt Ryan was sacked for 40-something times on last year. So that is clearly the message that the Falcons are sending, that they have to fix the offensive line. I mean, they draft a guard and a tackle in this draft. McGarry is a pretty good athlete. He's got long arms. Both of those guys you expect to be able to come in and play from day one. If you're going to spend first-round picks on offensive linemen, you're expecting those guys to come in and start from day one. Like I said, the Falcons are sending a clear message that they had to fix their offensive line.
I am curious because I would have flipped it. I would have thought, and again, I don't know what's happened. I got to look up to see what's happening with Taylor, man, because that's a guy that was supposedly a pretty top pick. So that's surprising to see what's happening with him, too, how he's kind of falling, too, as well. But that's something that, again, maybe we'll tackle later on because I don't want JQ to kind of pass out, too, man. But I mean, you got to figure out what's why is he dropping. There's got to be something else happening. He's not doing like a Larry Tunzel, you know, whatever. But what's just happening with that as well is a question for sure. West Coast, you got anything else to say?
Yeah, so, well, so I just saw the last three picks. And the last two came out of the Pac-12. And it looked at the wide receiver, that was a little bit of a surprise. Yeah, that was and the Patriots did that? That surprised me. That surprised me. But Pete taking a defensive tackle, Pete's going to go with defense and a run game. Yeah, and that's his game. That's his game in Seattle. Beat you down with the defense and beat you up in that run game. And let Russell Wilson win it.
I told you he's going to switch. Everyone's going to switch up. It's going to be interesting. What else you got? Gary, you got anything else, bro?
Well, the only thing I want to say is looking at that game tomorrow night, I think that's when Golden State, of course, is going to close that series out. But I'll say this about the Clippers. They played them tough. I think it is over. I'll be surprised if it's not. I'll be pleasantly surprised. But I think they played them tough. They played them very respectable. And so now you got the two best teams. So everyone says, you know, with Houston and Golden State,
the Bear,
you know, going head to head. And I do think that's going to be just a phenomenal series to watch. I'm looking to see which one of them loses to the Blazers in the Western Conference Finals. Okay, that's a bit of a stretch.
And the two series in the East. Wow. The East has some
outfits.
That's
a great series, the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Eastern Conference looked like some great series, too.
Yep. All right, gentlemen. Let's wrap this up, Rob. Good job, team. Go ahead, Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for tuning in for another great edition of Talking Sports with the 12 Man. As we just talked about, we got some great semifinal matchups in both the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. Like I said, the Eastern Conference is no slouch anymore. You're talking about two heck of a series, the Bucks and the Celtics and the Sixers and the Raptors. Two great series in the Eastern Conference this year. So we got some great playoff basketball coming over here. We'll be right back at you on Sunday night talking playoff basketball, and we'll get you all the final results for the NFL draft. You don't want to miss it on Sunday night. Good night, people.
Sir, good show.
Great show, guys.
Yep. Go ahead, JQ. I hear what you said. You said something with that, or you about to say something or not? Go ahead.
I was going to say, man, fantastic show. We appreciate everybody for listening to the show down on Sunday. We got to some more talk. We got a lot more rounds in NFL draft to cover, so we're going to see how our teams do when it's time to build the meat of that roster in rounds 2-7.
And there it is. All right, we'll definitely get to, and I know we'll get some Cowboy talk, and then Rob hasn't, his team hasn't drafted as well, too, so Rob can maybe add his thoughts as well, too, man. But again, that's what we got. Hey, gentlemen, have a great weekend. Please be safe. The month of April is quickly passing us over, but it's been very fast, man. Jazz Fest going on, too, Rob? Some
Jazz Fest
down
this
there for
weekend
you guys?
In New Orleans and the following weekend.
That's what I thought. Yep. All right, Joe. Don't get you fat. Hey, man.
Grandpa boys. Yep. I'm ready for it.
We know you are. Take some pictures, bro. We'll see you guys. Have a good one, gentlemen. Have a great one.
Get some sleep, you guys.
We will.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Y'all. Yep. Later.